Welcome, 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 everyone. Let me tell you, this is going to be a day today to the Watkins Award Show. I'm here, T-Tate, with his sidekick, J. Everett Pearsall. Mr. Pearsall, how you doing? Man, that's an interesting background. Okay, okay, you always have something to tell the fans. Where are you today, Mr. Pearsall?
Las Vegas either. On the Strip, baby. You can see MGM in the background, Las Vegas Strip at the Aria Hotel.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I tell you, you're not that masked man in the background as you normally are when we can't even see you. And certainly, you know, this is going to be an awesome day for the Watkins Award show. And, you know, I always like to do, you know, a few things later, but I got to do this quickly. Because one of the things I always have to do is a disclaimer, you know, and that disclaimer is always the views and opinion of the Watkins Award are the views and opinion of T-Tate, myself, and J. Everett Pearsall, that other guy right there that's sitting there with that shirt on, that another one of those Watkins Award an Alliance shirt. I mean, some days he goes back and forth. Today he's going sleeveless, but you know, he has on that shirt, that nice shirt as always. I know I can't wear it, but, you know, the views and opinion are ours. It's not a BBS radio. It's not of our sponsors. You know, it's not of the commercials. None of those guys. It's J. Everett Pearsall and I. And I want to make sure that people know that JMA Solutions and, of course, Exotic Car, Auto Quick Lube, you know, Magic Waste Valet, all those guys, you know, they're just supporting us. They don't have our opinion because we got an exciting guest that's coming on today. But Mr. Pearsall, let me start first with you. How can someone get that can they get that shirt there? Can I get one?
Now, you know, first of all, you know, I want to match the colors, you know, with that shirt you have on. And that background you have over there with the stadium. So the best I could do is to come out with my sleeveless. Now, you know, I got to create some items that give me a little exclusive swag now. So this shirt is not on the website. You can, however, get a polo. You can get a hoodie. You get some golf balls. You can get a backpack. You can get a Yeti mug. There's a whole bunch of things that you can get. But I have to reserve a few things for the executive director, my brother.
Now, where can they get this stuff from? They can go to the website, right?
MAAA.com. On the website, you'll be able to see it immediately where you can buy some of that wonderful gear.
Okay, and that gear is donation, you know, driven. So that means that the money, the proceeds, go to the National Alliance of African American Athletes, and we can continue recognizing some of these great players that we recognize.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you know, and of course, I don't want people to think that this is a, you know, a recorded show. This is live. You may have seen me with this shirt on last week. I can't help it. I just can't help it. If the guys that come on to the show are guys who just happen to be from the University of Georgia, I just can't help it that, you know, I'm in Georgia. I got on a Georgia shirt. Behind me is a stadium, Sanford Stadium, up in Athens, Georgia. You know, and so this guest that we're going to have today, unlike before, I mean, this guest is here already. He ready to go. I mean, he's locked and loaded and ready to go. So, Mr. Pearsall, I just want to ask you about the guest. When you first met this guest that's coming on today, what was your thoughts?
Well, you know, I often get an opportunity to see them at a game environment, but in that game environment, which I'll talk a little bit more about later, you know, I got a chance to meet his family, and I got a chance to be in an environment where, you know, the audience, nothing less than a state championship was acceptable. And so I kind of went into an environment where they were a dynasty, and the performance on the field with which I think the second team was in by halfway through the third quarter because they were up by probably 7 or 8 touchdowns It was electric. You really, when you look at college football, it probably was akin to that because the pressure that these guys had to play under was something that was expected for them to actually win a state championship. They were a dynasty. And to get an opportunity to hear the fans root for Muhammad as well as to meet his family there, it was tremendous, a tremendous experience.
I mean, you know, I'm always searching for stuff. I'm always searching for stuff and how to introduce these guys. So, you know, I searched and add my own flavor to it as well from time to time. But, you know, our next guest, I mean, because we don't get a chance to talk about anything. I mean, this guest jumped right in here. He wasn't waiting until 15 minutes. He gonna be right here on the top. So let me kind of prime this engine up a little bit like I always do. So Muhammad Massacoit ran up and down the field chalking up hordes of yardage and touchdowns and helping Charlotte Independence win four of their seven consecutive state championships. And, you know, he's a three-time All-State selection. Now, I call him Momo. You know, I guess I may have taken that from you. So Momo ranks in the top in several categories of receiving for the state of North Carolina. So, you know, we find top athletes. And so he ranks at the top, touchdown, receiving yards, I mean, all this stuff. So he's one of the all-time best coming out of the state of North Carolina. But after being, you know, academic All-American, a bona fide academic All-American, as we know, he selects the University of Georgia to come to. So, and we're going to talk about that process. But while he was in Athens, I mean, he went down there and set the record straight, even as a true freshman. He was a freshman All-American in 2005. So, you know, I look. And then as time goes on, you know, by the time he graduates, he's first team All-SEC. And he's also All-Academic All-American. I mean, SEC. And he's drafted. You know, he's 50th overall in 2009. So here's the other thing about this our next guest, is that I remember a game in this stadium behind me. I mean, you talking 93,000 folk in this stadium here. And that particular game was November the 10th, 2007. You know, and it was, you know, Coach Rick, you know, he always is playing with people's, well, his opponent's mind. And so they play in Auburn. They play in Auburn. And it was the first time that the Bull, and he probably remembers this, that this was the first time that the Bulldogs actually wore all black. I mean, they came out. I mean, this was just a mind game that Coach Rick would play. And they won that game. They won the game. But I do want to set the record straight of just how powerful the Watkins Award is in the National Alliance of African-American Athletes. Because during that game, Georgia was number 10 in the country and Auburn was number 18. Now, Momo scored a touchdown. But guess who else scored a touchdown? Ben Tate with Auburn. I mean, can you imagine going to a game and you got a Watkins guy on both sides? But this, I mean, clearly, you know, the score ended up 45-20. Sorry to, you know, Ben at the time. I mean, it was Momo's time because he had Matthew Stafford as the quarterback at that time, man. And this dude was just running up and down the field, catching whatever Matthew threw to him. He was catching the ball. So with that said, I got none other than by far one of the most electrifying but personable young men that is coming on the show today And I just want to introduce Muhammad Massakoi. Tell, hey, Muhammad, how you doing today? Or can I'm gonna just call you Momo today?
Hey, I think you've been calling me Momo since like 2005. So if you were to call me anything else, I had to come check up on you for real.
I appreciate it. How you doing
it's
today?
Always good to see y'all.
Well, you know, I want to get right to the juggler, man. I want to get right to the juggler. Because you were a scrawny little kid coming out of high school, man. You was thin. I was scared for you, man. I said, this dude is breaking all these records down here, man. You know, Independence was winning all these games. I mean, but when you was a kid growing up, I mean, everybody tells their story. What was unique about your story as you're playing youth football and going to high school? Did you ever imagine that you was going to be that kind of player playing youth football?
I'll be honest with you. I don't even know like how much we've dived into this, but you know, my family's Liberian, and the way they got to the country, they was escaping civil war. And we would always see those documentaries of, you know, just people and the conditions that they were in. And so just being over in America, there was a certain amount of gratitude that my folks had and a certain amount of empowerment. You have all these opportunities over here, don't waste them. And so that mindset just kind of just carried over into all elements, whether it was school, whether it was sports. And you kind of, you don't know necessarily what you're looking to achieve, but you just know that you're trying to achieve something meaningful and worthwhile. And so that kind of forces you to elevate whatever you're doing at that particular time.
So you knew your why. It was no doubt. So by the time you were in the ninth grade and playing football, did you recognize what type of athlete you was going to be during that 4 years at Independence?
Nah, that's the crazy thing. Just growing up, you're around so many individuals that are athletic, and everybody kind of has a certain way that they move, and it's just a matter of one, who stays out of trouble, who actually dedicates time to their craft, who has enough belief and support in themselves no matter what their situations are. Not even knowing what the next thing is, just knowing that there's a better thing than the situation that you're in. And so came to where we lived, you know, a lot of it was trying to get up out of there, to be honest with you. And being not only me to get up out of there, but get everybody up out of there. And so the why was crystal clear, and the intention behind it was crystal clear.
So what I saw from you in looking at a lot of your high school tapes, that your football, despite you being thin, not really heavy, your football IQ was off the charts. It's like you knew exactly how to run your patterns. The timing between you and the quarterback was like this dude was in your head, you was in his head. How did you get to that point? You know, that you understood the advantages of just being a person that was a student of the game.
Well, we didn't have any, you know, manicured fields and like nice parks to go play in. So we were playing in the street. And so a lot of times a car might be driving down the road and you're trying to get a play off before they come, or, you know, something's going on around you. And so sports, football, it gives you a chance to just zone out, just to be in the moment. And so after doing it in the street and everything that comes with that, when you get this nice 53-by-100-yard place that you can run around on, and you got comfortable cleats and you got a cushiony grass to run around in, that part becomes real easy.
So you get to the 12th grade. I mean, did you realize that you was a five-star athlete with extraordinary grades? Did that ever hit you in the head that you could have, essentially, you were right there in the backyard of Duke, North Carolina? I mean, some great schools in the ACC. You could have went up north. You could have went out west. But when you were in the 12th grade, what's going on in your mind?
You know what's crazy is getting a scholarship for sports, going to the NFL was really never a thing. Like, once again, my folks are, not even from America. And so this idea of, you know, using sports to take you somewhere else, it was more of a hobby. And so school was always the priority. When you got immigrant parents, they're like, you know, school is the thing that's going to take you where you need to go to. And so that was always a focus. It was almost a non-negotiable, to be honest with you. The same weight that was put on sports was the same weight that was put on academics. And so I laughed just because I got into Georgia as a student, not necessarily an athlete, like when they run you through admissions. And so it would have been the same for a lot of schools. I remember Dartmouth sent a letter, and I didn't even know Dartmouth was an Ivy League school. I had never heard of it. And I was like, man, they'll have a good football team. You know, I'm not going there. And Stanford was the same way. I was like, I'm not going to Stanford. Northwestern. So you get all these, you know, prominent academic schools recruiting you, and you have no idea what they are just from an exposure standpoint. This is pre-Twitter, Instagram, internet. And so I judged a lot of it. If it wasn't, you know, the Dukes, the Carolinas right in my backyard, it's like, if I fly out here, are they going to have a good football program? Just so I'm not miserable. But you know, it worked out great.
Well, you talk about your family, and then you named a few schools, but man, you was one of the top receivers in the country. I mean, how did your family deal with the recruiting process? I mean, like you said, you didn't have Twitter back then. This was pre-Twitter. So, you know, the volume of mail, the phone calls, how were they reacting?
Overwhelming, because once again, Everett know where we're from. Like, there's nobody else that's going through their process. So it's like, who do you talk to? Like, who do you ask these questions? And so we would go on visits. A lot of schools, obviously, they have a lot of brand weight to them. And so, you know, Georgia holds weight. So UNC holds weight. Florida State holds weight. Texas holds weight. And so from was I going to a decent program? That wasn't the question. It was more so, where do I feel I'm going to be the most comfortable when I get there? And who can I connect to in a way that it feels like home? Just because, you know, it's a numbers game. They're just trying to get whoever. And so it's who cares about me the most that I can spend these next 4 years there and have a great experience.
Well, you know, I give great credit to, you know, your mom's man. She's an awesome lady, very laid back, lovable lady, your sister, your whole family, man. I mean, meeting all of them. But what's going through your head? I want you to give, because a lot of young men watch our show. A lot of parents are watching our show. So they want to know what drove you to ultimately select the University of Georgia, because you could have gone to any SEC school. You could have gone to any Power Five school you wanted to. But how does Georgia get to the top of the list?
I mean, honestly, it's a combination of things. Georgia, Athens is not even 3 hours away from Charlotte. And so it's almost as close as going to UNC or going to NC State. Academically, Georgia was ranked high. They still are. They're climbing up. So it's making the degree hold a little bit more weight. I got a chance to go with my high school quarterback. You know, that was something that, from a comfort standpoint, once again, you know, when you're going and you're leaving home for the first time, you want to make sure that everything that going to contribute to success is there. And they also had receivers that were graduating. I wanted to play early. I thought I'd have a chance at Georgia to play early. And so when you factor all those different things in as to what makes sense for me, you know, it's a selfish decision, honestly. What makes sense for me, what makes sense for my family moving forward. Georgia crossed, you know, every T, dotted every I, and got there, never looked back.
Well, okay, you get to Athens. Look at that stadium behind me, man. That's 93,000 people in this stadium. So, I mean, and clearly you played as a freshman. What kind of mindset does a young man need in order to function? And this, because that crowd is an aggressive crowd back there. I mean, a Georgia fan is a Georgia fan. You, man, I mean, how do you function in this kind of environment as a freshman. You coming out of high school, and you know, that's one environment. But this here is a whole nother world, let alone going on someone else's home, you know, field. But right here at Sanford Stadium, what's the type of mindset that you need to be able to function back there?
Work and belief. You know, the work that happens well before you see those 93,000, however many people watching at home, and then the belief that you're supposed to be there. I think sometimes people try to cheat the process and, you know, just show up and, you know, whatever their God-given ability is, a lot of times that's not going to get you there just because there's so many talented people in the world. So you got to put the work in, and then the belief that you're actually supposed to be there. You know, a lot of times you can have imposter syndrome, or you can feel that it's too big or whatever the case may be. And I've been there, you know, especially like if I've had a slump where you start questioning yourself, you question your abilities. But in those moments where you're like, I've done the work, I prepared the best that I could, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to just enjoy myself. And in those moments like Auburn, where you're truly enjoying yourself, that's where you're able to shine. You let your gifts come out. But once you start overthinking it, overcomplicating it, that's when, you know, everything starts to go off the hinges.
Well, before I pass you on to Mr. Pearsall, you know, one of the things I got to ask you, because you got a real good memory, like most football players, you got a lot of great memories down there at Sanford Stadium. What is that one memory that you have about Sanford Stadium? I mean, whatever year, whatever game, what's that one memory just sticks out in your head there?
You know, it was the first time just taking it in of being on a field where all 93,000 people were there. And it was, I think it might be the Auburn game, even though we lost that game my freshman year, it was a night game. And I'm sitting there and I'm on a G and I'm just looking around just like, damn, this is crazy. Like, you know, this is wild. Like, is anybody seeing this? You know, because I didn't even go to a Panthers game prior, you know, growing up. The only real sports games that I went to was when I went on recruiting trips. And so being in the moment, a part of the experience, that was the first time where I was like, man, this is crazy, yo. And then obviously you got locked back in because you got to go perform. But right. that's when it kind of all just sunk in. And then, you know, you're like, all right, I'm here now. Let's try to get some work done.
Well, I know it's one of the top three or four largest stadiums in the United States. So, you know, you perform well every time your cleats hit that field. And that's the one thing that I can admire, that you always stay focused, you know, not only as an athlete, but you stay focused as a student. I was there at your graduation, you know, just watching you, you know, get your degree was, you know, a humbling experience to see such an athlete come through high school, be one of the top athletes in the state of North Carolina, and then get to Athens, Georgia, and play in that environment and still remain focused on your education. You knew your why, because you talked about, you know, how you grew up and going all the way back to your home in Liberia and just knowing that, hey, this is something I don't want to go back to. I'm going to stay focused. But, hey, with that said, Mr. Pearsall, I know he got about six different names for you, man. I've seen the two of you
what
all
you
laugh
about,
sometime, man, and it just blows my mind. So, Mr. Pearsall, Momo is all yours. I'm sure that's part of the AKA, but it got to be.
Mohamed Massaqua, a.k.a. Momo, a.k.a. Mo Mass, a.k.a. Big Mo, a.k.a. Mr. Independence High School, a.k.a. Mr. Perennial State Champion, a.k.a. Mr. Run Like a Cheetah, a.k.a. Throw It Up, I'ma Catch It, a.k.a. Georgia Bulldog for Life, a.k.a. Dedicated to my family and my faith, the intellectual genius, Mr. Mohamed Massaqua. Welcome to the show.
What's up? You already know we locked in.
Now, Tyrone dug into it a little bit, but one of the things that I always start out with is my first impression, which is always tremendous. And when I came down to Charlotte and I had an opportunity to go to this Independence High School that I'd heard about, but never had a chance to go to a football game there, I'd heard the chatterings of it because at that time we were doing the Watkins Award in Charlotte. And so I was in Charlotte every other week. I'd heard the folklore, but I never went to a game because we didn't have a Watkins guy from there. And so I went to the game and the energy was electric. Everybody went there, of course, expecting you to do what you do. I would like to tell you that in all the years, and it's 29, that I've gone to see Watkins men play, there are probably two performances that just jump out at me as something surreal, something I've never seen before. And when I saw you get out there on the field and score 5 or 6 touchdowns in the first half, I was like, what in the world am I looking at? It was the most incredible thing I'd ever seen, especially for a receiver. And right, and so I'm looking back at my paper and I said, what's his GPA again? What's his GPA again? I'm like, can't be real. Look at this guy play. And so, you know, I said, all right, there's a lot of pressure. We've also talked about the fact that I had the opportunity to come to your home. I knew Charlotte very well. I know the ills of that environment. I know it has its own challenges. Tell me how on earth, being as great of an athlete that you are, that you were able to stay focused to make sure you kept your head on straight, both as an athlete, but as a student.
You know, I think if people know you, they respect you. And I think once you start to like dance in and out of the world, that's when people, you know, they question it. And so coming up, you know, people always knew, like before we was in organized sports, that I was going to take care of that. And they always knew what type of time I was on. And so those pressures from no matter who they was coming from, I was always the guy that was like, hey, he cool. Like, you know, that's the homie. This what he on. And so I never really had to worry about, you know, the pressures that came with, oh, you know, I say like this, a lot of times in our community, we can distract people from actually going towards the right things just because they're not doing the things that people deem cool. But once you like state that, hey, this is what I'm on, people respect it. And then, you know, if you can play a little ball, people definitely gonna respect it, you know? And so it's just a matter of being true to what you're trying to accomplish. And, you know, most people gonna either get out your way so they don't mess up your progress, mess up your momentum, or they're gonna come alongside and put energy towards you and try to keep you on the right track so that you can get your business done.
Excellent, excellent answer. Now, if you had to think about one or two things that you had to run up against in terms of being an obstacle as you've gone through your journey, especially as it relates to being in Charlotte, being in that environment where obviously winning was the only thing, but being able to stay focused on everything, what could have distracted you to go the wrong way? What obstacle did you see that you can remember particularly that you had to overcome, and how did you overcome it?
Be honest with you, just environmental ignorance, I would say. Like some things are so normal that you don't know that they jeopardize your future. You know, whether that's the people that you're around, whether that's the things that they're involved in, the things that you might be a little too close to, that they're so normal because you're around it. And so looking back now, you know, there's a lot of compromising situations that I think that not even trying to be in those environments that you're just in just because that's where you live. Looking back, I'm like, I'm thankful that, you know, I wasn't at the wrong place at the wrong time. And so I think that you have to educate yourself on what is truly right, what is truly wrong, not in terms of where you're from, but just in terms of the life that you're trying to live. And so as I've gotten older, I've made it a point to not put myself in situations that could be perceived as normal, but the outcome could be very, very drastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you know, obviously we've talked to many Watkins guys, and some guys stayed home and some guys decided to journey away from home. Always intrigued with the challenges also, but what mindset you have to have in order to leave your hometown of Charlotte, with which I know you had some hate mail and the whole bunch of things coming at you for why you didn't go to North Carolina, you know, why you didn't stay in state and go to this school that they thought was better for you, but you journeyed off to Georgia. Tell me how you dealt with leaving your hometown to go to a different state and participate in their program and try to make them better. What's some of the things that you had to go through in order to accomplish that? And then when you got there, how did you kind of overexceed what they expected of you and be able to perform in the way that you did?
I think we got to parse out, like, how close is the hate? Like, if the hate's coming from your inner circle, that's different. But if it's just coming from, you know, whoever's out there, that's different as well. And so I think sometimes people let the wrong type of energy influence them. And so for me, I'm not really going to be influenced by, you know, the perception of somebody that I don't know, I'm not in close contact with, unless I'm like clearly out of pocket on something. But if it's just they have a different opinion on what's right for me and they don't actually know me, I'm not actually going to let that affect me. But the people that was close to me, they was happy, you know, that to be one of the first ones to actually go to a place like that and be able to contribute early. There was a lot of support. And so that's the energy that I've tried to always stay close to, the energy that's real, the energy that you actually know, versus pressures of somebody giving their opinion that they, you know, I can't even tell you what half of those people are, honestly.
So basically, you know, concentrate on those people who are important to you and be able to kind of dissect what it is that they're bringing to the table in terms of information, influence, and information to help you to make whatever decisions you need to move forward. And then thinking about it, when you got to Georgia, you know, did you feel like you were an outsider coming in, or did they just embrace you, or as you kind of competed against a lot of other athletes that were from Georgia and you not being from Georgia, how did that work out?
Man, I was happy, bro. Like I was so happy. It's like the first big hurdle that you cross, the hurdle of, man, I'm in a stable situation. I got a chance to do something meaningful in life. This is the entry point into the next phase of something that I think is going to be special. And so I didn't really care, honestly. You know, you get a chance to play ball. Somebody's paying for school. Had that not been the equation, I actually don't even know how we would have paid for school. No matter what school I would have been able to get into, that would have been a topic of discussion. And so when you don't have that type of stress, you could just move freely. You mean, all I got to do is go to class, work out, and then do whatever I want to do on my free time. I'm straight.
That's good, man. That's really good. Good for information. Now, one of the things I've really held you for and kind of use you as an example when I talk to both Watkins guys and people who are not, the ability to transition. And you just talked about it when we talked about the fact that you left North Carolina to go to Georgia and then obviously into the NFL and then the NFL into your professional career. What are some of the things that has helped you to be able to effectively go through those transitions so seamlessly?
I think going to Cleveland, I learned a lot. That's the pinnacle of our sport, but just how challenging that environment was, and not only physically, but mentally, whether it was dealing with energy or not dealing with injuries, or just dealing with like the mental like weight of not being able to be on a high performing winning team, you know, that was tough. And so I kind of used that experience and the lessons learned from that, whether it's, you know, making sure that my mental is where it needs to be, making sure that every resource that I could tap into to possibly help achieve the outcome that I want to achieve, I do now. And then it's clearly defining a goal. I think a lot of times we can get distracted with what's going on around us that we lose track of, you know, while we actually there. And so for me, especially when I was in Cleveland, like just all the noise and all the things that's going on, like you kind of lose sight of the gift that you have in front of you. And so now, even after the accident, after, you know, transitioning, being laser focused, almost in the same way that you are in sports, like this is the thing that I'm going after. These are the things that I need to enhance my abilities. These are the things that I'm weak at. These are the things that I'm strong at, and I'm going for it. And not having that imposter syndrome, but actually preparing for the outcome that you want. And so for me, being able to put the energy into the outcome versus the noise around you is what has allowed changes to be a lot more fluid.
Excellent. Now, when I came out to Cleveland and you had just gotten there and then subsequently a couple of more years just coming to visit you, you know, we spent a lot of time before, during, and after the game. We go out to XO and see LeBron sitting at the table next to us and all the other people. But what I did notice that even in all those environments, you were still looked at in a different kind of way. Your leadership came into play when you first got there. You earned that. You worked hard to get it because I'm sure they treated you like a rookie when you first got there. But then you kind of, you know, put yourself in a position where you became a leader. And I just watched the way you've interacted all the way through your career. What does it take? Is leadership something that you feel like you've had, something that you had to come to embrace? And then how did you sort of continue to cultivate that so that the people who really looked up to you and really tried to take on, you know, advice from you or look at you as an example were able to benefit from knowing you, the leadership portion of it?
Well, I think y'all know me. I'm going to be me. And so I think I've been the same guy. I've evolved. I've gotten more mature. But just like who I am as an individual hasn't changed. And so once again, that consistency, when people know what they're going to get out of you, and they know the standards that you're setting, not only for yourself, but you're trying to help those around you. I think that those guys know that, and the people that's around me know that they know if I can do something to help them, I'm going to try my best to get it done. And if I say something, I'm going to try to keep my word unless some like crazy foreseen thing that doesn't allow me to. And so I think just being solid that when somebody, you know, around you, they feel good energy that they know that they can count on you, that they know you're going to come through for them in a meaningful way. And not even keep a score, just like off the strength of who you are. And so I think that's just kind of carried me throughout life, honestly. And so hopefully that I don't foresee that changing.
It's a good trait. It's a good trait.
Yeah.
Now, you know, we hope that some folks in our listening audience have the opportunity to be blessed enough to go from college into the NFL and realize their dream of playing at that level, which is the highest level, and preparing them for maybe some of the things that will come up against them or things that they should know that they'll have to deal with. We always hear it's a business. Maybe you can elaborate on that, but what are some of the things that you had to sort of adjust to when you went from playing at the college level, which we've already talked about, playing at Georgia is no joke, to playing at the NFL level?
I think you really got to go seek your own answers out. And there's so many talented people that are coming in. There's so many talented people in the world. And so if you're waiting on somebody to give you the clues or the keys, that's not always going to happen. Sometimes you get lucky and you have great leaders around you, but a lot of times you have to go seek it out. And we're in an era where there's more information than needed. And so you can literally, you know, look up somebody, and if you don't have access to them, you can study them. You can study their moves. You can study, you know, how they move. You can study whatever you want about them. And so by default, you get this virtual mentor that gives you all the answers to the test. And so that's probably one of the things that I wish I would have known. Of, you know, how to eat, how to truly be a professional, how to take care of my body, how to do certain things as it relates to just being the highest functioning person that I could be. Because a lot of times it's not the intent and it's not the work ethic. It's those little subtle tricks of the trade that you need to know that separates one person from the other. Because once you get on that level, everybody's super talented. They've already passed the bar. For you know, athleticism and being gifted. You know, you're dealing with the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. And it's just those little subtle things that make you perform better or worse than the next person.
Now, you know, as you've gone through those journeys, we've talked about the transitions and the challenges, and obviously what we hear over and over from a lot of the people who are Watkins is that when you get that chance to meet other Watkins men, some of that kind of fits in. But through your journey, through your transition, and up to now, through your process, what has the Watkins Award meant to you?
I would say return to your core. Like, who am I at my finest? And when you think about what the collection of Watkins represents, you know, these strong, Black, intelligent, super gifted individuals. Not just in sports. That's one of the things that you would always say, like when we first met, not just as an athlete. And so when you feel that you're talented, you're well-rounded, and you can see a representation of other talented, well-rounded individuals all pursuing, you know, whatever their form of greatness is, that get you back, you know, motivated, get you back charged up, that you can do whatever you want to do in life. And so, you know, the listeners may not know, but after the accident where I had that crazy accident, and you're really just in the process of rebuilding life, you don't rebuild it from the accident, you rebuild it from the core. You rebuild it as what is the best version of myself. And so as I'm tracking back to, you know, Liberian heritage, Watkins heritage, you know, being young, Black, gifted, all of that, and not necessarily shying away from it, like actually leaning into that as to this is who I am. And so this is what I'm supposed to function like. And then figuring out the other puzzle pieces that I need to add to the equation to match what, you know, I'm telling myself in my mind and what I think I am to present day, what I'm going to be and what I need to be in the future. And so I think that's what the Watkins represent, is just this upper echelon, excellence, excellent. You know, it's almost like this God, what's the word that I'm looking for? It's a, you know, you get your Marines, you get your that group of individuals that you know going to come through whatever the mission is what I would say Watkins represents.
Excellent. Now, I left one of your AKAs off, AKA Harvard business grad. But, you know, when we think about guys, and Dr. Gavin does it best when he lines everyone up in the front of the room and he says, look at all these individuals. What do you think of them when you look at them? And you know that if in society, people lined up every one of you individually, you think about what your mugshot would look like or be intimidated, you know, by your Blackness and all the things that were negative. And then he asked people to tell him, what was your grade point average? And all the things that we represent Watkins been for, to let the world know, you know, really everything that they've defined as stereotyped the African male as is not true. What on earth possessed you to go to Harvard Business School, get out of there with the certification and the degree that they gave to you, and to be able to use it? Like, you're just a Black athlete, right?
So I'll be honest with you, man. I was about to start my consulting business. And I was about to start a project with a guy. We're out to lunch and his meeting's going great. Right as we're about to close the deal, finish it, he asked me a question I've never been asked before. He was like, hey, are you qualified to do this work? And I was kind of taken aback by it. And I was like, man, I don't even know if Brad just tried me or if he was asking a question. I really can't tell if he was trying to be condescending or not. But I started to think, you know, I was like, God, I feel like I'm qualified to do this project right here. I know I'll crush this project. But if I look out into all the things that I want to do, do I have the skills necessary to do everything? And I couldn't honestly answer that question, at least not at the level that I wanted to do it. And so I was like, okay, I want to figure out how do I make sure that I sharpen my toolkit? Because once again, you know, if you're a Watkins guy, you got to function at a high level. You just can't be out here playing around. And so I was like, okay, what is the best business school that I could go to? And I was like, you know, let me shoot my shot at Harvard. And got a chance to do what functions of their executive MBA. And, you know, that was a super honor. It was a tremendous honor. I damn near cried when we graduated. I had to hold it back. You know, I can't be out there boohooing on no pictures or nothing like that. But yeah, man, it was the thing that just sparked it. And following that, you know, I do a lot of work in organizational behavior, organizational change. And so decided, I'm not even sure if I shared this with you. I'm getting my master's in organizational psychology right now. I'll be done next August. And when you think about, you know, just function at the high level and are you qualified? And whether somebody else asks that of you or you ask that of yourself, you want to make sure that you are qualified. Not just in hope and belief, but like actually being prepared to do the work. And so if I ever get asked that question again, you know, or I don't get asked that question nearly as much nowadays, because people can see the work, people can see the background, people can see the pedigree. And so for me, it was more of how can I eliminate the failure points? How can I eliminate the bias, the questions that people may have on myself and my abilities? And so they can see me how I see myself.
That is extremely impressive and very powerful. What I'd like next to do, and I want you to know that I'd like you to take a couple of minutes and dig into this thing a little bit, because I want people to understand this great thing you're doing. And so we'll lead into it. Talk about some of the community stuff that you did, you know, both with Cleveland while you're at Georgia and even after that. And then I want you to really take a couple of minutes and get into what your new business is, the consulting business that you and I have talked about that you just launched. I want you to take 2 or 3 minutes. And if someone was listening, they could walk away with a good grasp on what your business was, what your consulting company does. So give me an idea of a couple of things you did in the community leading up to now from a business perspective after the NFL. And then tell us a lot more about your business and your consulting company.
Yeah, man, I think I do a lot with kids. You know, you just don't know what seed you could spark. You don't know what is the piece of the link that a person needs to get, you know, to where they're going. And so whether it was the dealing a lot of stuff with, I'd say PAL, the youth sports leagues in Cleveland, the reading initiatives in Cleveland. I'm on a board of Malcolm Mitchell's Reading Initiative now. There's another foundation, SWORD, that builds home for kids who have any type of disability. And so anything that's able to empower the next generation of kids, PAL is obviously an inner city charge. I grew up as a PAL kid, whether it's donating time, donating resources, actually showing up there, just because I remember Eddie Jones. I'm not sure if you remember the old Lakers player that came over to the Hornets. I didn't even get a chance to meet him, but he was in the school, in my middle school. I didn't meet him. I just heard he was in my middle school. And I thought it was the wildest thing that like a professional player was there. And so you just never know just what your presence could do for a kid that's hoping and believing and thinking that they could become something. And so those type of things, I'm usually, you know, all hands on for it. It's not even negotiable. It's like, if you need me there, I'm there. If I can donate resources, those are coming as well. Just because it's important, you know. Yeah, I think we all have talent that we're waiting to unlock, and we don't always have the recipe. We don't always have, you know, the playbook. And if I could be just a small part of somebody's journey, it's irresponsible, it's selfish of me not to do my part. None of us are that busy. None of us are that important to where we can't make time to trying to help the next group of leaders come up in the world. And so, yeah, that'll always continue as well.
Great.
And then from a business standpoint, when the accident happened, I really had to look myself in the mirror and just say, okay, like, what do I want to do at the highest level? Just being out here, you know, with a regular job was never something I had any plans of doing. And there's no knock on that. It's just the standard that I set for myself. And so I started to just think about, okay, what are the things that I want to do? And thinking about, I was a psych undergrad, fascinated with performance, especially as it relates to business, how people maneuver. And as I was coming out of the accident, I had different organizations ask, hey, you know, can you come speak to my team? And so after speaking a couple of times, I'm like, okay, what are you actually trying to accomplish? And there would be some type of CEO change, or there'd be disruption in the marketplace, or there'd be the people didn't have any type of engagement or burnout, whatever the case may be. And I'm like, oh, I kind of understand, you know, those things. A lot of it was learned through sports, but then, you know, a lot of it was learned through business as well when you add Harvard in, and a lot of it's being learned now as you think of organizational psychology, get my master's in it. And so what I do is I consult on team culture, diversity, and inclusion, and just how talent is evolving so that they can innovate to whatever the next business cycle is. And so I've been able to have this company now for 3 years and been able to work with some of the best companies in the world, whether it be Microsoft, Biogen, Truist, PwC, CAA, really just helping their organizations measure how talent performs, train and develop how the talent performs, depending on one of those three elements there. And so been fortunate, been blessed to do the work, and just excited about how it continues to grow.
I'm so excited for the business. It's definitely a niche for it, and I know it's going to be successful as you continue to dig in and make a change in the business environment out there. When you first told me about it, I love when I hear something new. I've been in corporate America for 30 years. I have not heard of anyone coming in and approaching it the way that you do and being able to bring something to the table that's tangible and valuable. And now with that psych major, I know how you've been playing with my head since 2005. if there was right. one sentence or one phrase or one slogan that you would give as a message to a kid that was listening to the show today, what would be that one sentence that you would give to them?
I had a friend right before he started his business. And we were talking and I was just like, man, how do you feel? Like, what are you, you nervous or whatever? And he looked at me and he was like, he said, the unknown opportunity excites me more than the future makes me nervous. And in seeing how he went basically from zero to being able to build, you know, $500 million company, is just super fascinating. And so I kind of live by that, you know, the unknown opportunities excite me more than the future makes me nervous. And so I think a lot of times we can look into what we think is the future and it could be big, it could be daunting, it could be scary. And we let that, cripple our growth. It cripples our ability to move forward, but actually being excited about it and figuring out how do I pivot and maneuver in real time to create the outcomes that I want to. There's just something meaningful to that. And so for the kids coming up that are, you know, nervous about what the future holds, they should actually be excited about the opportunities that they can create for themselves.
Very well stated. And again, another slogan that we hadn't heard before. We asked that question and everyone sort of has their own unique experience, but the way to impart something that they've internalized that can someone else could take that and drive them forward in terms of being, you know, empowered on their own journey, if you will. Thanks, Mo, brother. You know I love you, baby. I appreciate
the time.
I love
y'all, man.
I'm gonna turn you back over to Coach.
Hope to see y'all soon. For sure. We'll be in a district this year. And look to have a meaningful celebration like we always do.
I know Tyrone will say, let our listening audience know how they can reach you, all your social media and so forth, and your website.
That's it.
So all my my social handles are Iron Massaqua. I kind of took that moniker. My website is TheVessel, TheVessol.com. I think I'm like the only, Muhammad Massaqua in America outside of my dad. So you'll get to one of us, and either way he'll loop you back in with me.
And you can always email the show and we'll make sure we make the connection. Again, over to Coach Tate.
Hey, Muhammad, I just want to say as well, because you mentioned it a couple of times, man, and that is you overcame quite a life-changing incident. And somehow you just have such a focus to overcome anything, man. And I just want to thank you for your time. Muhammad Massaqua, I mean, it's just no way in the world words can explain our appreciation and how you have been successful throughout life. So thanks again, our special guest, our very special guest, Muhammad Massaqua. Tell your wife I say hello. I mean, you got awesome lady. Man, you got children, just a child or children running around the house.
Just one. I'm going to send y'all some pictures when we get off.
We look forward to it. Thanks again, ladies and gentlemen. Here you got, J. Everett Pearsall and I with our special guest, Muhammad Massaqua, and we're certainly appreciative. You know, thank you very much for stopping by. And like we tell everyone, if they missed this show or got in on the late side, and also they can listen to the podcast version of all of the major podcast platforms. This is T-Tate and J. Everett Pearsall and our special guest, again, Muhammad Massaqua, here on the Rockers Awards show. Thanks, everyone. Have an awesome, awesome day.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. See you next Monday.
Hey, get him home. Get him home.